Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 760, and we're recording it on October 2nd, 2025. My name, Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And joining me, as usual, from North Mankato, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
And Martin, where we are experiencing summertime here in North Mankato.
Us too. Yeah.
Looking for 90s
tomorrow. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Nice. I love these October warming trends. I can mow my yard a little bit longer. That's okay. Don't mind. So
keep it nice as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What else is new in your world?
What else is new in my world? I don't know. Life goes on.
I heard you had a seminar at your congregation.
Hey, you're right. I missed that. Yes, we enjoyed a Everyone Outreach seminar this weekend at our church, St. Paul's here in North Mankato. Blessed to have Pastor Eric Recker and an assistant. I'm not remembering his name because I didn't end up in his group, but we had almost 60 people there, I think. And that was really exciting to see. And just some really great thought-provoking discussion, and not as uncomfortable as I thought I would be. It was actually a lot of fun. And
oh, you're a natural.
We didn't have to, you know, role play or anything awkward or anything like that. It was just really good conversation, lots of great ideas shared. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we're going to do it in November at our congregation. So
all
we're
right.
Looking forward
hopefully
to that.
Everyone has that outreach mentality now, and that we're going to continue to support that and grow that.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that, you know, probably does have outreach implications, but I think it stretches across all kinds of different use cases in a congregation and school. And that is kind of a way to listen to your members or others through surveys. Digital surveys have become super easy and maybe even too easy. They're pretty prevalent, pretty easy to prop up, and I think in pretty active use across our synod and across our congregations, just trying to figure out what people are thinking, gaining consensus. Our strategic planning committee at our congregation about 6 months ago did a pretty comprehensive survey on a bunch of things, including things like service times and communion practices and priorities and all manner of things. And we, I don't know if we did it right, but we got good turnout and good results. And there are right ways and wrong ways to do surveys. So we thought, hey, let's spend a little time talking about the tools and the approaches in particular to taking digital surveys in ministry settings.
Yeah, and we look to experts as we do that kind of thing, because Martin and I don't have all the answers for
we
all those
definitely
questions.
Don't, not in this area for sure.
Probably known to have created some really pretty bad surveys in my past, you know, just because there are right and wrong things to do. So this time we turn to lovely young lady that's involved in a lot of different synod efforts, as well as her own job and family and all kinds of stuff. You'll hear all about that. We were blessed to speak with Alicia Cameron, and maybe we'll just let her introduce herself.
Joining us today is Alicia Cameron. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, our pleasure. We're really excited you could squeeze us in your pretty busy schedule. I know you're headed out of town real quick here for some job-related stuff, but some time to pick your brain on a couple things, especially our topic, which is congregational and school surveys, which is right up your alley. So before we jump into that, why don't you give us a quick introduction of yourself, background, any kind of projects you're working on for Wells at this point? I know you've got a lot on your plate.
Sure, yeah. I don't sit still. I currently live in Waukesha with my husband Thomas, my two boys. I've lived in Sheboygan. Prior to that, we were in Bloomington, Indiana. That's where I started my career at Indiana University Center for Survey Research. I was a study director there, implementing research studies, focusing on questionnaire design. I love figuring out what the right question is to ask that gets you the answer that you need. Currently, I'm the director of strategic operations and quality at Service Direct, which is an online marketing company for small home service businesses. I've done that since 2018. I love having a work from home career that allows me to balance family life, which is super important. Outside of work, I like to knit, spin yarn. I find that my brain really, really wants that tactile thing after staring at a screen all day. So that's what keeps me filled. Outside of work and home, I have the privilege to serve on the executive team for Wells Women's Ministry. I'm the leader of the Titus II team. We focus on providing training and resources which teach women how to grow in their own personal ministries and at home in their local areas. I've always been passionate about good quality data. Going back to like my grade school years, I remember the school science fair where I developed a whole data set about which route was the best to take to school. I had a stopwatch and charts and graphs and it was great. So I timed all the lights for three different routes for weeks on end.
That's awesome.
You are a prep grad and WLC grad. And at WLC, what was your focus there?
Yeah, I graduated with a degree in political science, heavy on the research and data in there too. Loved that experience and getting into the numbers and learning how to tell stories with numbers, which was really fun.
You are my daughter, so I know that you love to spend time in spreadsheets and work with the data. And one thing you didn't talk about was your position on the Wells AI Task Force.
So. Yeah, so that's the newest thing I've been doing. Thanks for the invite to that. So it's been fun to think about how AI impacts ministry, both the positives and the negatives.
Interesting stuff. Well, we know the task force is out with a new survey just recently. We'll probably talk about that a bit in the show as well. But besides that, we wanted to focus specifically on congregations and schools who probably have about a million reasons to try to gather data for different purposes. And just wanted to pick your brain a bit on best practices around surveying in general, things that congregations and schools should keep in mind.
Yeah, it seems like as soon as anyone has a question, they're like, okay, let's jump to a survey. Let's collect all the data. You're like, wait, take a second. Let's do this purposefully. Because there are good surveys and there are bad surveys. And I've taken a lot of bad surveys. We're like, ooh, I'm not sure what you're going to do with the answer to this question. So I think my number one thing is, does it need to be a survey? Is it something that's just better to ask people and anecdotally, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Or do you really need to take someone's time to sit down and think about an answer, collect that in aggregate, and have a way to analyze that result? So really think about the research question that you want to answer before you take up people's time. Kind of the next component of that is then, okay, we've decided to do a survey. Everybody ask all the questions you possibly have. This is our opportunity. This is the only time we're going to talk to these people. And you make it 30, 40, 50 questions long. And then you've lost sight of the real purpose for the survey. My general rule of thumb is 10 questions, which everybody's like, oh, that's not very long. But you only get someone's time. Time is very precious to people, and you want to make sure that they are answering exactly the right questions that get you to the answer that you need. So when you sit down and think, okay, here are all the questions, narrow that down, see if there are any you can collapse into categories. That would be my number one. Don't make it too long.
Very
So you
good.
talked a little bit about some things to avoid as you're kind of thinking about all the potential questions you could ask and all the people you could ask them up. Talk a little bit about segmenting surveys. I think oftentimes congregations just throw it out to everybody. Are there reasons to kind of skinny that down and segment it to a smaller group?
Yeah, again, that comes down to your research question. What are you really trying to get at? You want to think about how you want to analyze those results in the end. Does it matter if people are in different age groups or different areas of ministry or different parts of the country if it's bigger? Or I would say those are outside of your kind of 10 questions that you get to ask is, how are you going to break this data down demographically, and include those up front and say, here are the kind of groups that we want to look at this data by. These are the kind of factors that would impact our results. People might be in different buckets for different reasons.
And a big piece of the puzzle is, and you've mentioned it multiple times, what are you going to do with the data? So, I guess one question that comes to mind is privacy, like how long should the data live and who should see it and things like that. But then, how do you go about drawing conclusions from what you've gathered and sharing that information?
Yeah, a good question will end up analyzing itself, which is really nice. When you ask the question with the right categories and breakdowns, you can then just kind of jump to the end and say, okay, this question told me the answer that I needed. Sally, repeat that question again so I can get
Well,
to both parts.
another angle is the privacy,
Oh,
how long the data
privacy.
should live, who should see it, how it should be reported, that kind of thing.
People don't want to answer questions that they know is going to get out there, right? So keeping things in a small group, keeping things only accessible by the people that need to analyze the data, is really important. The nice thing about current tools is that they have great ways to do that anonymously. You'll get just a link and you can share that wherever you want to. You don't have to email it out to specific people and track respondents. That way you can say, hey, this data is anonymous. You won't be able to know exactly who responded. I would, keep true to your word when you say, hey, this is going to be anonymous. Make sure that it's anonymous, that you put kind of a generic link out there, unless it's important that you do track who that came from. If something's less sensitive, you want to be able to follow up. The other thing you can do at the end of a questionnaire is say, hey, if you want to follow up and provide us more information, give us your details there and we can reach back out to you. In terms of how long you keep something, it depends on how long you need it, but I wouldn't keep the respondent to question answers tied very long, especially if you're talking about something that's sensitive in nature. A lot
Sure.
of the good survey tools just kind of do that for you. SurveyMonkey's free, available. Any congregation that's looking for a good quality, easy to implement, it's going to guide you through a lot of that, actually. Either you can import a respondent list or you can just send out an anonymous link. It keeps track of all the responses when they came in, how that all ties together. It can help you do a lot of the analysis too. And they've implemented a lot of AI features in there that kind of automatically figure out what your question responses should be too, if you're stuck on kind of how to generate a good question.
Nice.
How long do you keep a survey open? What's a good rule of thumb for that?
I would say as short as possible. You're going to get the most response initially when you mail it out to someone or you put it, that kind of first blurb. You get about a week before people forget about it, aren't interested in it anymore. You're going to need to do some reminder emails or more public publication. If you have something open for a month, 2 months, 3 months, that's just giving more opportunity for people to say, oh, I'll do that later. That's not important. A quick, short campaign is going to get you the most response. One of the other things you want to keep in mind is how to get the people in the middle. If you're talking about something that's kind of opinion based, you're going to get really strong responses on either side. The people that care positively or negatively about something are going to respond first and hard and loud. And it's kind of harder to get that kind of middle ground. You can do some of that in your questionnaire design to tease that out, but making sure that you have a good response, what's the term I'm looking for? A good sampling of the respondents that you're trying to get instead of just one side or the other.
Amazing tips.
One last question before we ask you about a little bit about a recent meeting you had with Wells Women's Ministry. The reporting of the results back to the respondents, important, what form? Any advice there?
Oh, absolutely. So when you spend the time to take, minutes out of your day, even if it's just minutes, you want to know what the impact of that is. So sharing that those results are really important. You can put it in a report. Reports can be dry. I would, a lot of survey tools now have already done graphs for you. Do it as visually as possible, but then work at telling that story back to the respondents that you gave it to. So whether that's in a school newsletter or at church with a presentation, share with everyone where the results came through so that they know what kind of an impact they had, how the direction of the research is going, makes them feel better about participating for sure. I would advocate for doing things visually as much as possible. I don't mind staring at a spreadsheet and numbers, but that's not for most people. So taking those charts and graphs that come automatically out of the survey tool or putting that in Excel and you can, generate a bunch of those. AI will do some of that for you, but you have to
Yeah,
double
maybe make
check
an
those
infographic
numbers.
even.
Yeah, infographic. One of the things I've loved in terms of presentation tools right now is called Gamma. And it'll take the results that you put in and it'll create the nice, pretty charts behind the scenes. And you can actually tweak them on that presentation before you present it. So the one thing I've noticed with AI analyzing results is it doesn't always get it right. You have something that says 58% and it says 63%. And you're like, where did you get this number? That's not the number I saw. So double checking all of those numbers when you use it to analyze those.
Yeah, sometimes they say that AI is not always very good at math, which is really
It's
surprising.
not.
So,
You're right. Yeah. And I
interesting.
found that a bunch. Double check your numbers for sure.
So let's talk a little bit before we let you go about women's ministry. You are on the executive board, and you guys had a 3-day meeting here last week. What's the latest from women's ministry? Anything exciting? And maybe even dip into your thoughts on how they're using technology and to enable some of those ministry plans.
Yeah, we had our annual face-to-face meeting 3 days long, which is it's incredible. We get to spend some time in the Word together. We do our annual planning. Kind of the newest exciting thing coming out is we're working on a podcast, joining your well-traveled ranks of doing this for so long and hoping to kind of share more personal stories and let you hear from Wells Women's Ministry. Still kind of working out exactly what that's going to look like, but that's really exciting. We have some upcoming webinars. Those have been very popular. We love being able to provide information on a topic that's really pertinent, timely. This next one is coming up in October about teaching the word, leading women's Bible studies. What else are we doing? We have a lot going on Instagram, Facebook, sharing some nice, good content for your social media feed instead of scrolling past all the, whatever else is going on in the world. We love being able to provide that. And a bunch of us are going to be presenting at Leadership Conference about a variety of different topics. So we're looking forward to doing that. I'm teaching one of the breakout sessions on women teaching women.
And I hear you are headed to Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia for some connecting with other women over there, sharing in their ministry is really neat and exciting.
Yeah.
I'll say the one thing about our face-to-face meeting and how I loved that technology helped. That was so much content. We were trying to talk through so many things in such a short amount of time. I had a recorder going, my note taker, and that helped so much. We had a couple people not on site. They were able to hear what we were going up through, see those amazing summaries and kind of click to different points that served as kind of our second brain. And that was a really helpful tool we were able to use this time in getting that all summarized and back into our notes
Yeah.
efficiently.
What did you use for that?
I use a tool called Fathom. There are a bunch of different varieties, but there's a free version of that as well. So
Cool. Great. Alicia, thank you for your time. And I know we had to kind of squeeze this in between travel and all the other things that you do, but super helpful and blessings on your work, both
yeah.
as a mother to my grandkids and a Wells Women's Ministry board member and are on our task force. It's been fun working with you, talking about technology and how all that can help ministry. So thanks for all you do.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's all a blessing. Glad to be able to talk this morning.
Our thanks, of course, to Alicia, busy lady.
Busy lady, you must be a proud dad.
She's not only raising my two oldest grandsons, but she's got a lot of other irons in the fire, and she's doing some nice work for the Synod now at this point too,
Yeah.
and I know she's enjoying that.
I think one bonus of my job, 21 plus years with the Synod, is just being in awe of how God puts us together as a Synod and blesses us with different gifts. Like, who knew that Alicia's experience and degree and research and everything that she's done would eventually come to fruition on a AI task force and the women's ministry group? I think that's just super awesome to realize
Yeah, I was
how
just
God
trying to
is at
think when I
work.
started at the Synod in 2004, she probably was at Luther Prep at that point. So
Okay.
20 some odd years. Well, we started, I think, in the same year. So
I think we did.
21 years later, she's doing some awesome work and a lot of knowledge, especially about our topic, which was survey. Anything surprise you, Sally? What are your thoughts on the conversation?
I guess keeping things short is probably,
It's hard to do, right?
it's not
You
surprising,
want to
but it's
ask all the
actually the hardest
questions.
thing. Yeah, you got them and you want to plumb the depths while you're at it or whatever. And I just think being concise and getting to your point of what you're trying to gather is really great advice. Also, it was kind of funny to me that her very first thing was, do you need a survey? Maybe don't survey people, from
Just
the
ask
survey
them,
gal.
right?
It's quite possible that a survey is a bit overkill. So yeah, just interesting perspective from someone who does it and has done it for a living and
That
stuff.
struck me too. Just taking a temperature check in other different channels, whether that's a meeting or fellowship or in a Bible class or whatever, is probably useful data as well. And then when you're doing a survey, make sure you know what you're going to do with the answer. What are you trying to get at here? How is it going to inform your decision making or direction or feeling about my ministry plan, a decision, a budget, whatever it is that it's going to inform? Be purposeful. You're taking people's time and you want to be clear about what you're going to do with that. So, yeah, interesting stuff. You had a little fun with AI. You built a little query that asked about what makes a good survey. Anything that you surfaced there that was helpful?
That's a great question as well. And the one point that I thought was especially interesting was to ensure cultural and spiritual sensitivity. It's kind of a theme, but culture is what we talked about in our evangelism workshop this weekend, and culture is part of our strategic plan. I mean, so just trying to keep things real with the people that you're addressing, not trying to be outside of the norm, but mm-hmm. questions around service and discipleship and community and things like that, so that it's not awkward, I guess, mm-hmm. but it's more fitting with who you are as a congregation or school.
Yeah. So. We are, I think we mentioned this in the interview, maybe not. And maybe we didn't even talk about it in a previous show, but we are doing an AI survey ourselves at the synodical level. If you are a call worker, you have probably received an email asking you to fill out a survey. So Alicia was certainly involved with that, but I'd be interested to see that. And I think we were fairly faithful to her best practices, you know, for that survey. But the thing that I'm interested in, maybe in any survey that I kind of learned in the process, is good ways to measure sentiment. Is it a strong feeling? Is it kind of a come see, come saw feeling? Is it a negative feeling? Those are helpful, you know, to know where the majority lies, because a lot of people can have opinions, but some are stronger than others, and that makes a difference. And I think how you react to that. So it's good to try and write questions that gauge sentiment if you can. And then it'll be interesting to analyze the results and see what AI can do to help us figure that out too. Although Alicia said that's not always something that she has a lot of confidence in either. So we'll have to see.
And just a quick mention of the tools that Alicia dropped, because that could be a show in and itself. She has some mm-hmm. cool tools under her belt. First of all, she had a lot of good things to say about SurveyMonkey. Been around probably that whole 21 years we've been working for Synod. We've used it in the past, and seems like kind of the gold standard or whatever for surveying. You can use it for free up to certain limits mm-hmm. and things. The other ones she mentioned I really liked was Gamma, which mm-hmm. is kind of AI generated presentations and documents and websites and social media. She said she was using it specifically for presentations. Yeah. And I'm just super impressed that, you know, they can write out your slide decks. You can pick a theme that you want to use, and it will generate a really professional looking presentation for you just kind of mm-hmm. on the fly. And then you can obviously do a lot of tweaking from there, but looks very professional. And you can also try it for free and use it up.
I think
to
we brought that up on the show, and I think that's maybe where she learned about it. So
is that right? Was I not paying attention that day? Because I don't remember that.
Well, we did talk about a lot of things. So,
yeah.
But we'll have to go back into the archives. I think I was put,
I'm
put
sure.
in touch with it at some point, and I've tried it a couple times. And I think you can do up to 9 or 11 slides for free.
I think it says
like
10
that.
Cards per 10? Prompt.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I've used it a couple times. It does a pretty nice job. So.
And then the third tool that she mentioned was something called Fathom, which we've talked about this concept. I don't know if we pointed to this mm-hmm. particular tool, but
no,
basically allowing AI note-taking to happen. And it even says it's like HIPAA compliant and mm-hmm. everything, which reminded me, my doctor actually walks in the room and says, is it okay if I use AI to take notes? And turns on her phone to record mm-hmm. a conversation between my doctor and I. So it's definitely out there and being used. And perhaps this is a tool you'd want to check out. Again, starts with free pricing and you can go up from there. But fathom.ai is the mm-hmm. website for that. So
very cool. Mm-hmm. So thanks to Alicia for her time, and continued blessings on her work on our behalf in Wells Women's Ministry and the AI Task Force, and serving in her congregation there at Christ the Lord in Brookfield too.
That's a long list.
It is.
She's a busy girl.
She is. All right, let's move on to our ministry resource segment.
Sure. last week we pointed to the Wells, I'm sorry, not last week, last time we talked to the Wells Strategic Plan, which is out and there's a website dedicated to it and everything. Recently, Forward in Christ started a series of articles around it and looking at each of the four pillars of the strategic plan. The first being culture, which interestingly overlaps very heavily with the focus of Everyone Outreach that happened in my congregation. So we talked a lot about culture, about what it means to not sit in the first 20 pews at your church or whatever, all these different things that are just the way we are and that outsiders maybe don't understand fully or jive with, you know, it feels awkward to them or whatever. So that's kind of cultivating a gospel driven culture, that what we do, kind of like Paul back in the day, is everything to those that are seeking the word, that we are willing to impact the work by being willing to change our culture if we need to or whatever. Just lots of great tips here. This is a very short synopsis of the entire pillar of the strategic plan, but definitely a good read, written by Pastor Recker, who was at our church talking about culture just this past weekend. So check out this article to learn more about that pillar of the strategic plan.
Nice tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's our ministry resource. Let's move on to our picks of the week.
Yeah, and my pick of the week comes from the Evangelical Lutheran Synod, or ELS, as we happily refer to our friends, actually headquartered here, right here in Mankato, where I am. Mm-hmm. ELS has a lot of resources out there, and this one in particular caught my eye the other day. I think it was my friend, Pastor Jeff Hendricks. He's been on the show on the past. He's got a lot of different gifts. He's serving over in Oregon, Wisconsin, I believe. And he mentioned that there's a repository of liturgical year artwork available on the ELS website. And so being the inquisitive person that I am, I went and checked that out. And they have a whole bunch of cool imagery that you can make use of, perhaps for bulletin artwork or whatever. It's organized by the church year. I dug into the commemorations and festivals just to look at an example. They're using Google Drive to organize this and just have a lot of different ping images out here that you could make use of if you were needing imagery for your particular Sunday or whatever, maybe a special festival, whatever it is. So very well done. It's all this kind of line art, black and white graphics, iconic basically. And lots of good stuff out here. You can go into the different parts of Christmas, have images for all kinds of different things related to Christmas, and all kind of fitting this diamond shape and making the imagery fit. So yeah,
PNG files mostly. So those will display nicely in lots of different ways, whether it's a website or a document. Cool.
Definitely. So yeah,
well done.
If you're looking for something new that's for worship art, there's definitely things here from our friends at ELS.
Yeah, I noticed some of them been around a long time. Back, I saw some 2015 creations and such. So
it indicates that Don Molstad started it, and Jeff Hendricks is continuing it. It's for non-commercial use and granted for reproduction and distribution within church settings or personal use. So good stuff.
Very nice. Nice pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My pick of the week is actually not necessarily a pick, more a tip. I spent a little time with Google Gemini exploring different health apps. And I thought, well, an interesting question people might have is, what ecosystem has kind of the best health devices? And so I mean, like, is it Apple devices? Is it Samsung? Is it Google? So I kind of asked Gemini to do a quick comparison of Phones and typically smartwatches are the companion tool that a lot of these smartphone uses to kind of build a health ecosystem. And it did actually a very nice job. Over the years, I've had all of these. I've been in all of these right now. I use a Samsung phone and a watch, and super happy with the Samsung Health app. But I've also been happy with what Apple has done, and then Google too. I think the big takeaways from the results, and we'll share the document, the Google Doc that was produced from the Gemini research, is if you are in the Samsung or the Apple ecosystem, you're in a good place because they work nicely together. So if you have a Samsung device and a Samsung watch, the Wear apps are working nicely together. Same with Apple. If you mix and match, not quite as good. But then they kind of call out Google as kind of being a little more entry level, but maybe more open as well, where you can, it's a little bit easier to attach things like Fitbits and those kinds of things that make life maybe a little cheaper sometimes, because these smartwatches and smartphones can be pretty expensive. So it kind of differentiates them on that level too. But these things do all, depending on what the watch or the phone does, you know, EKG readings, antioxidant readings, obviously pulse and temperature readings. All of those things are kind of built into these devices with these advanced sensors, VO2 levels, and those kinds of things. And you kind of put them all together with a smartphone and a smart app. One thing I like about Samsung is it has a built-in food tracker. So, and actually a pretty deep database, so that if you want to track your calories and your macro or micronutrients or your salt intake, it does that. My cardiologist is big on, you know, tracking your food, so you know what you're eating, you know what you're putting in your body, and what it's doing to your heart. So tracking your food is a good way to just kind of pay attention to what's going in, and you can attach it to how you're feeling as well. And sometimes your doctor will want to know that too. Well, what has your diet been like over the past week now that you're feeling this way or that way? Because that drives it. What is your activity level, your exercise level? What's your resting heart rate or your exercise heart rate? Those are all dynamics that make a difference if you kind of put them all together, and some of these apps do a nice job. So I would say that's one of the real benefits of a smartwatch. That's why I usually wear one, is it does that kind of tracking, and it's just kind of a little nag or reminder, you know, to pay attention to this stuff, because it's easy to ignore it. Say, well, I'm going to eat what I want or do what I want. You know, if I don't, you know, I don't want somebody tracking my steps, or, you know, what I'm, you know, when I'm eating, what I'm eating, those kinds of things. So there's all kinds of use cases for it, EKG readings and those kinds of things. And a lot of them have disclaimers that you shouldn't use these for, you know, professional readings, but I would say they are all just kind of good indicators and just kind of a reminder that we got to be taking care of the temple that God gave us too. So hope you enjoy the what I call a smart health comparison. There are other things too that don't fall into those ecosystems, but I thought I would just play a little bit with that and give a pick of the week for that.
It's amazing how much detail and
Oh
how
yeah.
well organized and everything that is. Really impressive that if you are wondering about something, it's probably a good place to turn to get some initial feedback and
Yeah.
information.
Doctors do recommend their use now. I think they've come a long way, and I've got a coworker that, you know, is having some health or heart issues, and they recommended to them to, you know, get a smartwatch that'll track those things and can test for arrhythmia and AFib and those kinds of things. So,
Interesting. I'm
yeah.
really anxious for it to catch up on the diabetes
They have
spectrum. I have
diabetes too.
two
Yeah, they're
sons
getting
with,
close, I
I
think.
think they are, and
Yeah.
that's really exciting.
Yeah. Very good. So that is my pick of the week.
All
Let's
right.
move on to community news and feedback. I've got both of
Interestingly.
these. I think I put a couple items here that I came across in the community news category. One of them is just came out yesterday. This is from OpenAI, and the folks there. It is the second version of their video generation AI model called Sora. Sora's been around, I think, for about a year and a half now. Sora 2 is out, and if you watch their videos, it is pretty amazing. The videos that they show are all AI. Sam Altman appears prominently in them, and this is all not him, although it looks exactly like him. One big thing they added with Sora 2 is there can be audio in every video at this point. There is just some incredibly amazing things that they can do from nothing, essentially. I'm not saying this is good or bad. I am saying this is probably something you're going to start seeing pretty prominently in everything, whether that's advertising or in social media. One thing that they added in Sora 2 is the ability to add cameos, which is basically a way to add yourself to a video. So you create, there's a few steps that you go through with taking videos in a certain format, in a certain way, and they will add you riding atop a dragon, for instance,
yeah.
or on a unicorn or whatever, in a very lifelike way, your voice. Experts are saying they've only had a couple days to look at this, but it is very difficult to tell that this is AI, which is both scary and kind of amazing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to be seeing more of Sora too. And there are the other guys are doing the same things. I think it's, what is it? Vio on the Google side. There's a few others too that are getting there too, but this one seems to be in the lead at this point. So I don't know what this will do to social media and the like, but I'm sure it won't be insignificant. So
just have
up.
To jump in and say, I found a prompt this week that would allow you to get a headshot, like a professional headshot. I gave it one photo. I did not look like this in that one photo, but it came out with something that looked pretty professional.
Oh, for sure.
And then I gave it my cat's photo, and she looks pretty professional as well. So I decided, what am I going to do with this? I sent it to my family and said, hey, I wanted to surprise you. I got this professional headshot done. And my son was like, wow, I might let you do my taxes, you know, like kind of held back and then I didn't hear anything from anybody else. And I thought, they're really
too
contemplating,
funny.
Is that real or not? And so I showed them the cat picture to let him off the hook that it wasn't a real photo of me, but an AI generated one. But
that's awesome.
Getting pretty smart.
Yeah. What did you use for that?
I want to say I used Gemini, but I couldn't find the article that I'll have to throw it in the show notes. I'll find the article that I referenced, but somebody had come up with this very precise prompt. It's quite detailed and the results are pretty amazing. So
yeah, for sure. Great shot.
Mm-hmm.
The other is an article. Let's see, where was this from? I got to open this up here.
I've got it here to share too.
Morning Brew. On AI is creating work slop and hindering productivity. I had last week, I was listening to a podcast where I heard this term for the first time, work slop. This is a newly invented term. I think the Harvard Business Review had an article that they coined the term work slop. And basically work slop is AI generated work where you really haven't put in the effort, but you've actually created something that is now creating more work for somebody else. So you've kind of, you know, hacked together an AI generated work product passed it off or said, here's my deliverable. And then somebody kind of has to weed through it and determine, you know, what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong. And they're saying that this has been a productivity killer in a survey that they recently conducted, where companies are being less productive with AI because of this phenomenon, or whatever we want to call it, called work slop, where AI is making things too easy and making us perhaps lazy in our approach to information delivery or research or analysis or document writing. And people are complaining now that they're getting this from coworkers, and it's making their life a little bit more miserable and bringing productivity down. So an article from, what was this, September 24th. It's a quick 3-minute read if you want to read it, but it's a whole new term that I had not really been familiar with until just the past couple of days. Work slop. And,
yeah, interesting. Obviously, we've talked about, you know, that it's not always right, or that it mm-hmm. can be not the right solution or whatever. I think work slop and the focus on it is interesting, but they don't have the converse of that to offset it, because there are gains as mm-hmm. well.
Oh,
and
for
so,
sure.
Yeah, where's the net of that? I would say personally, I have a hard time thinking to use it, but when I do realize, oh, this is something AI could help me with, it's really helped me a lot mm-hmm. just in the last couple of weeks. Just, I'm writing a query, or I'm writing an email, and I'm going to give it the draft of my email and let it, you know, sharpen it up or yep. whatever. So yep. I've had a lot of good results.
Yeah. So anyway, those are our little nuggets, or at least the nuggets that I found out on the interwebs this past week. If you'd like to contribute to the show, we would love for you to do that. If you go to wellstech.wells.net, you see all our shows back to show number one is available there, for better or for worse. But show 760 is there, and you can see all of our work and notes, and should say mostly Sally's work and notes. But if you want to contribute to the show, that's the place to go. You can leave a comment. You can visit one of our social outlets there. They're all linked there at the top. Or you can send us an old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, and let us know your thoughts, comments. If you've got an interview suggestion, if you've got another Alicia Cameron out there that we should definitely talk to, we'd like to know that. So let us know how we can improve and how we can make the show better. So that's what we're about. Mm-hmm. Sally, I think that's going to do it next time. We're going to talk about something AI next time we meet. We're not exactly sure of the topic, but that's been our focus here for this season, is to get a little bit better handle on the goods, the bads, the uglies, all the things related to AI and how that impacts ministry. So we will have results from that survey that I mentioned. I'm not sure if that'll be ready to brew up for our next meeting, but maybe we'll have some initial results there too. So,
you know, we can't tell people what we're going to talk about because the articles haven't come out yet. It's 2 weeks away, and there's going to be some breaking news in AI that's
right.
going to guide us. Who knows?
We can, as the professionals say, pivot as necessary.
There you go.
Yes. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Bring a friend next time. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.